This is Mark Lovell reading Changing Trains. My mother and I once changed trains in Milan. This was not the best place to do so for British citizens trying to return to the UK from Romania in March 1940. We had no choice. In the first months of World War II, the major powers glared at each other, building alliances and planning what to do as opposed to actually doing it. Italy was committing itself to Nazi German leadership, but was still independent and officially neutral. For my mother, this was the anxious part of the journey. For myself, age 5, Milano Centrale was just another large railway station. I couldn't have imagined it would be a turning point in my life. Porters transferred our luggage from the train that brought us from Bucharest to one taking us to Nice in France. We followed them from one platform to another to make sure we could find the right seats on the right train when the station grew darker in the late evening. My mother also insisted on being shown exactly where our luggage was stowed. One of the porters spoke urgently to my mother in French. Her French was good, but she had very little Italian. "Be very careful," he advised her. "Keep to the sides of the concourse where there are more people. If anybody asks you a question, always answer in French, never English." We followed this advice. Suddenly, we heard a rapid stamping of boots passing down a platform while we made our way across the concourse. This stamping became the background to a rousing military song. The lyrics were unintelligible, but my mother immediately understood the cry that men in black shirts were shouting as a chorus. "Morte agli inglesi," death to the English. She said later that she talked to me a lot just then, so as to appear indifferent. The singing and shouting she treated as background noise. She chattered as mothers do. "Are you warm enough, Mark? Lots of people in this station, aren't there? Are you hungry? Should we get a bite to eat somewhere?" I understood somehow that I needn't say anything in reply. We found ourselves near a restaurant built into the side of the concourse. Outside, close to the entrance, was a large man in his 40s with reddish-brown hair. He beckoned to us as we were about to pass him. He moved in step with us and tried several languages. "Scusate, mi signora. Bonjour, madame. I wonder if..." My mother began to move quickly away, clutching my hand. But then he said very clearly, "Strand Palace Hotel." This was so unexpected that she stopped and said, "Hello?" "Hello, madame," he replied. "Please come into my restaurant. You'll be perfectly safe." He led us to some booths at the back, installing us where we couldn't be seen from the entrance. "Thank you very much," said my mother. "Did you say Strand Palace Hotel in London?" "Yes, indeed," he told her. "I worked there nearly 4 years. That had been after basic training as a restaurateur. Curiosity and ambition had drawn him to work in other European cities. He liked London and he liked Londoners. He was less complimentary about much English cooking. "Now I manage this restaurant," he said, "but my kitchen cooks Italian." "You speak very good English," said my mother. I felt left out of this interchange until he shook hands with me and said, "Hello, Marco," and asked me to call him Raimondo. My mother explained where we were going and told him our platform number. She expected he knew about trains and the political situation, as well as about restaurants. "Will it be safe on the train?" she asked. "I mean, for us?" He wanted to reassure us, but he was also realistic. "Nobody stopped and questioned you when your train reached the border at Trieste?" My mother shook her head. "I just showed the guard our tickets." "Then you will probably be safe here and at the French border. But use French all you can. Does Marco speak a little French?" In Bucharest, I had attended a French school for young children of journalists, diplomats, and people in the arts community. I was proud of what I had learnt. Mais oui, monsieur, I said, bien sûr. Bravo, Marco, he smiled. But are you hungry? May I get you something for you from the kitchen? My mother was nervous. She had drawn some Italian lire before travelling, but not much. My father had arranged for her to collect French francs in Nice. Raimondo restored calm by saying everything was on the house. She should keep any Italian money for encouraging the staff on the train to be cooperative. Escalope, perhaps, and for Marco? Maybe not for you, Mark, said my mother. I'd recently had bad toothache. It had disappeared, but until I could see a dentist, he mustn't chew much. Raimondo smiled. I make good omelettes, he claimed, and so it was. I wolfed down an omelette. He was also running a restaurant. He told his staff not to disturb us. He himself would be our waiter. He was very busy on our behalf as well as with his business. When he came by, I wanted to join the conversation. I told him, mon père, il parle quatre langues. It was true. Being fluent in four languages was partly why he was a correspondent for Reuters, based in Central Europe. Raimondo smiled and nodded, bravo, so do I. My mother gave me a look that meant stop right there. My father had revealed in his reports that Romania was increasingly succumbing to Nazi pressure. For this, he was now on the run, and our rule was to say nothing about him. The military song and the boot stamping sometimes resounded close by, but here we felt safe. Raimondo brought us a fruit plate. Eventually, he brought our coats. Come with me slowly and wait just inside the door. He exchanged hand signals with his cashier positioned about halfway to our platform. Then he told us to go forward, slowly and purposefully. He also made an appeal. Italy is difficult now. Believe me, people here are sometimes good, sometimes misled. He wished us luck and we thanked him. Later, my mother said we should have wished him luck too. She worried that his kindness to people like us might land him in trouble. Once I was installed in our compartment, my mother visited the luggage van. She came back crying. Someone had slashed our suitcases with a sharp knife or a box cutter. The hard leather hadn't been penetrated, but the cloth coverings were in tatters. She explained later that she hadn't cried for the luggage, but for how the knife might have targeted us. We made it to Nice. Was this a life changer or just part of living and growing? Physically, it helped us avoid interrogation, internment, splitting up, and possibly worse. But it influenced me mentally, too. I learned that kindness exists in unexpected places, that languages are there to be used, that my mother would have gone through hell for me.